she inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. This is Gina Murphy Darling, and you are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World, an inspirational and informative place where we never tell you what to think, but we just want you to. Thanks so much for joining us and for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. And a big thanks always to one of our partners, without whom we would not be having Mrs. Green's World for this long, the Fairfax Companies. They are true leaders in the business of sustainability. And since their inception, this company has strived to be a leader in sustainability and is dedicated to improving the environment through creative and innovative management practices. It never ceases to amaze me how they have evolved and the things they continue to do to make our world healthier and safer. So let's get ready to talk about all you need is less. You can hear it in my voice always. You'd think after 10 years I might get a little nonchalant, but it just doesn't happen because of the amazing guests that I get to spend time with. So I'm very excited to have with us for this next hour, Madeline Somerville, writer, blogger, and author of All You Need Is Less, a guilt-free guide to eco-friendly green living and stress-free simplicity. Now, you have to love that. All those words, those intentionally chosen words that make you want to read the book. So, Madeline, it's great to have you here, and I can't wait for you to do all the talking and share away.
Hi, Gina. Thanks so much for having me.
I know. I'm so excited. And I was thinking when I was getting prepared for the show, it's just amazing the number of people out there that are doing transformative and wonderful things on behalf of Mother Earth. And you certainly are one of them. And I should have said in the intro, oh, by the way, she's hysterical.
No pressure, right?
No pressure. Let your humor shine. And, you know, you just have to know it when you read in the, you know, like I think it was in the About section, and there's your picture, and it says, hello, friends, my name is Madeline, and I'm incredibly lazy, scratched out, glamorous. It's like, you know, you had me from hello, well, you had me from hello, friends. So I was like, okay, I am going to love spending time with this woman. So, you know, I pretty much like to start every show in kind of the same way because I'm always interested about, you know, there's always a lot of territory to cover, but I always want to know what got you started on this path of living consciously and being aware of Mother Earth and all her bounty and how fast we're burning through her. How did you start? I mean, did you really start when you were 8?
No, I came to it quite late. My mom was always quite conscious of that kind of thing, but, I mean, we always recycled and we had a compost bin and all this kind of stuff, but it really wasn't, it was just something you did. It wasn't really, I certainly didn't grow up as a hippie and doing all this sort of crazy sustainable off-grid stuff. And I had a fairly typical, you know, childhood and adolescence, and I remember actually when I was a teenager being quite grossed out by the idea of secondhand shopping. Like, it just, I was so not into it.
Right.
And for me, I came to it a bit late, probably when I was, I don't know, 23, 24, and I had moved to this tiny little town in BC, which is on the west coast of Canada, and it's sort of a province known for its more environmental meaning, maybe a little bit of hippie, you know, sort of like California, that kind of stuff. And when I moved there, we got a dog, we got this puppy, and it was the first time that I'd really made the connection between the products that I used in my home and on my body and what they might be doing if they were ingested or what they might, like what ingredients they had in them. Cause my puppy would come home and lick the floors that I had mopped with this like fluorescent yellow cleaner with warning labels all over it. And it was this very, I like remember the moment very clearly, like looking at him licking these floors and thinking, huh, like that can't be good. And then thinking, well, if I wouldn't want my dog to lick the floor that I mopped 3 hours ago with this toxic cleaner, why am I using it? And so I started doing a lot of research into it, and my first step was the same as I think many people. I started buying eco-friendly cleaners So I switched all my stuff. I started buying, you know, natural shampoo and really trying to focus on being conscious of the ingredients and the products I was bringing into my home and using. But it's really expensive, or it can be. Yeah, it can be. It doesn't have to be, but typically when you go into a grocery store and you look at, I don't know, like a bottle of Windex versus a bottle of, you know, eco-friendly cleaner, it does sometimes end up being more expensive, and it can be a bit of a deterrent. Like, it almost seems like there's this surcharge to being environmentally friendly.
Yeah, for doing the right thing.
Exactly. I was like, why is it like this? And I was working as a youth worker, like in social services, so I didn't have a ton of extra money. So then I went to the next step, which was learning how to make stuff myself, which I had no idea you could even do. And this is when it all really began, was when I started finding recipes and tinkering with them and making my own stuff. And then this light bulb went off that this could happen, that you could actually do these things for yourself. It was incredible.
And it's cheaper. There are so many things that you can do that's cheaper. And I like to make that case all the time. For example,
yes,
vinegar for cleaning your windows. I mean, my husband has always hated Windex. He just mm-hmm. like, it was maybe not an environmental thing, but vinegar, you put it on the windows, it cleans it, doesn't streak it, and it's so cheap. I mean, it's flat
perfect.
Out cheap.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's why it was so frustrating when I went and was looking at all this stuff, and even some of the perceptions that came from the teenagers I worked with was that organic was too expensive, eco-friendly is too expensive. It seemed like it was this sort of luxury thing, which I just thought was crap. Like, it shouldn't cost more to live an eco-friendly life, because if you're doing it right, it costs way, way less.
Way less. It's so true, and I love that you say that. It really, really does. All my listeners really listen to us. It's cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's a hurdle, because it's a problem. And that's actually why I wanted to write my book, was there was two things that I kept seeing, you know, as I got further and further into the, you know, eco-friendly community and the environmental community, there were these two pervasive ideas. One, that it was really expensive and that you could only do this if you had a ton of money. And two, that it was took a lot of time. You could only, you know, make your own products if you had hours of extra time every week, which who does? Who has that?
Right. Not anybody I know.
Right. And then that you were also somehow better than somebody else if you were doing this, and thus could look down and look down on everyone else, and then also feel super, super guilty about the things that you weren't doing. It was like guilt was the only way to motivate people into doing this. And I just thought, like, this is just not fun. Like, who wants to get scolded? And then, you know, that doesn't motivate people. So that was kind of the impetus behind writing a book.
I think it's very interesting, though, like for my journey and many people that I have met and crossed paths with these past 10 years, so many of us really did get started when something led us to read more about what we were putting on our skin, on our bodies, mm-hmm. or what we were cleaning with. And, you know, when you were saying that about the dog licking the floor, one of the most painful shows I ever did to this day was a woman, and I wish I could find her. I don't know how to do it because I was on Clear Channel then, and I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But she was on the show, and I was like, really, talk about green. I was green with this. And her daughter died from licking the carpet, which, you know, kids put their mouth on everything.
Right.
And she got cancer on her tongue. I mean, you know, so that's one thing. And then my friend who's a vet, I just flat out asked him, I said, so Randy, am I crazy? Are dogs sicker? He goes, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. everything. I never had a dog for my first 20 years of practice with pancreatic cancer, all kinds of cancers and liver diseases and diabetes and thyroid. Mm-hmm. He said, dogs, it's not that we didn't diagnose it, they didn't have it. So you know, it's a perfect storm of things. But anyway, so I call the root of all evil, in terms of climate change and rapidly accelerating climate change, overconsumption. This, mm-hmm. to me, when people say, what can we do? To me, it's like, everybody can do this. Start with being much less of a consumer and being conscious in what you buy. I mean, I just got back from the Climate Reality Project leadership training in Denver, where, by the way, Al Gore spent a lot of time with us. I loved it. But it anchored me more than ever in this belief. So what are your thoughts about overconsumption, and what's the psychology behind it? Why do we all become overconsumers?
It's probably the thing I'm most fascinated by and most frustrated by. And it is increasingly something that is really, really overlooked.
Especially
when we talk about, and it's because it's sort of a double-edged sword, because it has been really, really encouraging to see how eco-friendly living and environmentalism has become mainstream over the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years. It's cool to be environmentally friendly. It's cool to bring your own bags to the grocery store and to have a reusable water bottle. Like, these are things that have now picked up steam, and they've become, you're not the weird person anymore if you compost. Like, everyone knows what this is, right?
Right.
And so that's fantastic, because more people are becoming aware of it. It's becoming a hot button issue. People are reading more about it. But the problem with that is that it's become commodified. So it's become a trend. And this is where it gets kind of dangerous, because it's eco-friendly living is now being sold as what you buy rather than what you do. So it's become another lifestyle to buy into. So if you want to be eco-friendly, you have to have, you know, the expensive hemp upcycled clothing, and you have to have the super trendy stainless steel water bottle, and you have to have, you know, the organic face creams, and it becomes just like everything else about brands and what brands you're aligning with that create your personality. And this is kind of problematic. And it comes back to overconsumption, is that you're not going to solve the eco-friendly problem by buying more eco-friendly things. You're going to stop it. You're going to stop the huge, like, environmental devastation, a good portion of it, by buying less or not buying things at all. And this message really gets lost because people can't make money on it. You have, like, there's very, very few companies that commit to a message of consuming less. Patagonia is one that comes up the top of my head. They have, they always are holding, places where you can come and you can get your Patagonia clothes repaired. And they want their clothes to last, and they don't want you to buy a new coat every year. But for most companies, they don't want to talk about this because they can't sell you their random strange cleaners or their eco-friendly stuff if you're not buying it. So that's a message that's become really, really lost. And, I mean, this is why, when we talk about eco-friendly living being cheaper, this is why. Because the first, when you look at the three R's, the reduce, reuse, recycle, they're in order of importance. So the first one is reduce. So before you start looking at buying eco-friendly products or buying eco-friendly anything, think about whether or not you actually need that thing in the first place, period. Because the most environmentally friendly choice that you're ever going to make is to simply not buy something, to not consume something. And this is really challenging for people, and that's what it comes around to, the psychology behind consumption, that we really are a society that we identify ourselves with what we buy, with our products. This is sort of how we create our images. And when we're asking people to separate themselves from that, it can be really, really, really challenging.
I'm writing stuff down because, I mean, you're like a hashtag waiting to happen or a really good tweet. And I always think about my family first and how we have changed. I mean, I was one of those people. But, you know, just like I had a candle closet. Believe me.
We all were.
Oh my gosh. It's like, what? And when we were moved, you know, 11 years ago, the guy who moved us, I'll never forget it. He said, Miss Darling, I said, yes. He goes, do you have a thing for candles? Because every closet he opened had candles shoved in them. And
yes.
It was like, what? In my lifetime, I'll never use all these. So, and they weren't really the good candles. But my children and my grandchildren, they are all becoming total minimalists, not wanting stuff. Like, I'm trying to give them some of my stuff so I can get rid of it. They don't want stuff.
Mom,
no, I don't want 6 of your 13 Christmas bins. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just bring one. And it's that is a thing that I see is really good. But you're right about the snobbishness element, you know, because I don't want to buy hemp clothes. And you go on some of these websites where they're so eco-friendly, and you think, oh yeah, $178 for that sweater, I'll go to Goodwill.
Exactly. And some of it has to do, I mean, in some ways it's kind of good that these things, and even the cleaners and that kind of thing, it really does make us aware of how much our lifestyle is subsidized by people overseas who are not making a life and making a living. Like, a lot of our current lifestyle relies on exploiting other people, typically overseas. But, and so when you see, you know, a $50 t-shirt, And it's not just a ridiculous brand, but it's a t-shirt that actually made the effort to source local materials, employ local workers at a fair wage, you know, fair trade labor standards. It actually, that's the actual cost of a t-shirt. Like, that's what it costs, but we're so not used to paying that. But the other side of it is, yeah, we are so obsessed with creating an image and displaying to people what we're about that it becomes this almost strange existence where it's like, well, will anyone know that I'm eco-friendly if I'm not wearing this stuff, if I don't really outwardly align myself with this image of an eco-friendly person? And I have it all the time where people come over and it's like, they're surprised that I have plastic Tupperware or that I have, you know, some plastic cooking utensils and this kind of stuff. And it's like, well, this is stuff that hasn't worn out yet. This is stuff that predates my sort of hippiedom.
The big enlightenment, and I'm with you.
Yes.
I mean, if you don't, I have Tupperware from my Tupperware. Some of it, I'm not kidding, has to be 40 years old. And it's,
yeah,
it
and
works.
If you've already got it, keep using it, but don't buy any more.
And don't put it in the microwave.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
But a lot of the time when people get into this, they want to do a quick one, like a complete 180 to
total
show people
purge.
This is what they're doing.
Yeah.
So they want to throw everything out, get all new bamboo and glass and all this stuff. And those are fantastic choices to make going forward, but use up what you have first, because otherwise, I mean, we're just still in this cycle of, you know, consume, dispose, consume, dispose. So that's ultimately what you're trying to interrupt and address and examine is how you consume and how much and why. And once you can get to the bottom of that, I think you're well on your way.
And the most wonderful thing about it always comes home to me the last several Christmases we have, because we celebrate Christmas. And we all made the declaration. None of us has unlimited funds. This is all my children and my grandchildren. So what can we do to give each other intentional gifts? And they were so different. Like, we went to Taos this Christmas and we bought all things locally, things like massages. You know, I mean, really, you know, now there is a chocolate place in Taos that I knew all of my grandchildren and children would love that. So gift certificates, but the chocolate place, totally fair trade, totally, you know, sourced ethically. The family knows where they get the cacao. I mean, it was just like, it was a joy for me, and it was expensive. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
We made an event out of it. You know what I mean? It's way cheaper than going to the movies and filling up on crap. Mm-hmm. So those kind of things. And to your point, so much less stress, not up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, wrapping presents that are
at the mall 3 days before Christmas.
Oh my god,
do I have enough? Do
yes.
I have enough?
All of us are like, our big accomplishment is we got presents without ever stepping into a mall. It's just so weird.
Yes.
How things have changed. I used to take my kids there and we'd go for hours, and now none of us want to go in because they even can smell it. Like, it smells in the mall, those chemicals that they're putting in it. So we're not
and
that.
It's really hard to not want everything you see. I find this
it
same
is.
Thing like it. It's very challenging. So it's almost like not bringing junk food into your house, and then you know you're not going to devour a bag of chips at 1 a.m. If you just don't go to the mall, it's very easy to not buy anything.
It's so true. And there are triggers for me. Like, if I go to Crate and Barrel or Pottery Barn,
oh my god,
they were like the devil for me. I had to have everything.
The home stuff.
The home stuff.
Because
what do I need that for? So now I have closets filled with that. Quick question before we go to the first break. And maybe we'll have to come back to it, because I'm famous for doing this. Start the big question and then we have to say, hold on, please. But we really should talk about how we mobilize, because you do address this. People to address this without guilt trips or fear-based warnings, because that's not sustainable. It's just not good. And I have friends that, you know, they'll see me and they'll go, oh my gosh, I have a water bottle, but I blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't hate you because you have a water bottle. I'm glad you feel guilty that you saw me and you don't better show up with it the next time. But it's like, those are close friends that I can guilt trip. But as in general, I don't want to guilt trip or put fear in anyone. But how do we mobilize those people? We have 1 minute and then we'll come back to it after the 30-second break.
Okay. Yeah, you're definitely going to have to interrupt me because I'm not exactly brief in my responses.
No, I love that. I want you to I love it. You have me.
Okay, well, I think there's two parts to that. And the first part that was really important to me as I started talking more about the choices that I was making is that I think it's really disingenuous to present this perfect, idealized version of an eco-friendly life. And I'm not perfect, and my choices are not always perfectly eco-friendly. And I think it's really important to talk about that and to show that, so that you're not creating this unrealistic image that people feel like they can never live up to.
Right. Like, hold that thought, and we'll come back with it, because we need to sit on that one for a minute. Everybody, we'll be right back. All You Need Is Less with Madeline Somerville. This is a blast. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy, darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for joining us. And joining us, all of us, for this hour is Madeline Somerville, writer, blogger, and author of All You Need Is Less, A Guilt-Free Guide to Eco-Friendly Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity, which you can find at Amazon.com. I encourage you to do that. Read the write-up about the book. And just a little bit more before we go back into guilt trips and fear-based warnings is Madeline's website is hilarious. I don't want to talk about you like you're not here, because we know you are. But once you spend about 2 minutes on it, you want to read more. And I have to read a quick quote from the About section that she wrote. "Ever since I was a sullen child of 8, I've adored writing in all incarnations, dramatic, exclamation-filled diary entries, pseudo-journalistic endeavors for small-town weeklies, and the bastard child of the above, blogging. So give yourself a treat and check out her website. It's at sweetmadeline.ca, not .com. So let's go back. My husband is the board op, and he was just laughing because I have perfect timing for asking a really important question when there's about a minute left to the break. But I'm getting better at going back to it. So let's talk about it. Guilt trips, fear-based, don't work. How do you address mobilizing people or inspire them? That's what we want to do, is inspire people to change.
Exactly. And because everyone's going to come to this with a different reason for doing it. There's going to be the people who gravitate toward this on their own and are really, really passionate about it. And these are mostly the people that you find, you know, writing about it, talking about it, blogging about it, sharing it, because they get so excited. And that's definitely one of the categories that I fall into. And then there's other people who are kind of curious and want to try it out and want to see what it's all about. There's other people who come to it really reluctantly because, you know, their family members are driving them nuts, or, you know, they come into contact with one of us enthusiastic people. But it's important to realize that, like, everyone comes to it in their own time and everyone comes to it differently. And so presenting this image of this perfect, idealized way that you have to be is really off-putting for many people. And it's not hard to understand why. If you present eco-friendly living as an all-or-nothing scenario, you're going to lose so many people, and I would be one of them. If the only way I can be eco-friendly is by living in a yurt, off-grid, you know, milking my own goat, and, like,
with a composting,
you know, sewing
toilet,
my own clothes, yes, this is not going to happen for me and probably, like, 80% of the other people. It's just not going to happen. So I really try and destroy the idea that if you can't do everything, you shouldn't do anything. So it doesn't matter if you just make one small eco-friendly change in your life. That's a good place to start. You don't need to feel like, you know, whether you read my book or you learn about something, you don't need to feel like you need to overhaul your life in a weekend and become this different person and drastically change your life. It's so incredibly unsustainable. Anyone who's made drastic New Year's resolutions about, I'm going to do yoga 8 times a week and suddenly be vegan, and then 3 weeks later they're like, you know, binging on Netflix while knee deep in Cheetos, like, this kind of change just doesn't last. So you need to change things slowly and incrementally and not be guilting people when they can't do everything. Like, yes, I cloth diapered, but I also used disposables when I traveled or when I went to go stay with my mom who didn't have a laundry. Or, you know, on the same topic, one of my friends had a really bad postpartum depression, and I spoke to her, you know, when her son was about 8 months old, and she was apologizing for using disposable diapers. And it was like, this is not the thing that matters right now. Like, if this is going to make you crazy to do, do not do it. Like, don't sacrifice your sanity, your relationships with your family members, your downtime, like anything like that. If it's making your life miserable, there's no point in martyring yourself for the cause, right?
Right.
So,
Go ahead.
No. Oh, I was just going to say that it's important to adapt or adopt changes that fit into your life, that you're enthusiastic about, and then just gradually keep going. I think that's going to be a far more sustainable way.
And there are things that I am shocked about. Like, one of the things that I learned through lots of pain and suffering is, you know, if the one thing I can do in terms of my diet to help the planet, it would be to eat less beef. And I am a carnivore, and I'm working so hard. It's like Mrs. Green, everybody knows this. I'm not a big vegetable lover, which sounds like a contradiction in terms, but I'm working on it. And I don't want to feel guilty all the time. But what I do is, we don't buy beef in our house, but if I go out and it's the only thing I want on the menu, I'm going to locally owned restaurants. Most of them do know where their cow came from, and it wasn't from Big Ag, trust me. So I will have a hamburger, and it is guilt-free. And I think that's what you're talking about. It's like, it's not all or nothing. I don't think I could actually eat a steak, because once you stop chewing on flesh like that, that sounds so disgusting.
I find the same thing.
It's like, I'm like, I can't do this. And the same thing has happened for my husband. But it is a sustainable journey for me, saying, we're not going to buy it here. Hasn't been a problem. And I don't miss it. But when I eat out, sometimes there's a place, here we go, it's called Graze, G-R-A-Z-E, and it is, like, I call it guilt-free burgers, because they probably kissed the cow, knew its name, you know, fed it by
hand. Yeah, the cow had a better life than we
all
did.
All those things, like, they probably had a better life than we did and never worried about the interest on their visa. So let's move on for a minute about your thoughts on, there's lots of programs out there now, like literally, I'm not kidding, programs for decluttering, organizational systems you can follow, and I can tell you, for me, I'm a piler, so none of them have worked. I can't tell you how many people have tried to organize me, and I have my own damn system. That's what I want to say to people, and I can pretty much find anything, but maybe some people, do they work for? What is your thoughts on the, you know, the things that, if you do think you need help, can you get how-tos that help?
Yeah, I sort of, my thoughts on this are divided, and I'll explain why. I sort of look at these methods as like the fad diets that come out. You know, there's like, you know, paleo or the Whole 30, or like sort of these ways of eating that come out that are very strict and disciplined, and they help a lot of people. My father-in-law loved paleo, and it really helped him. He lost weight, and he lowered his cholesterol. Like, it really worked for him. And so I don't want to slam these systems, and I don't want to slam the people who have benefited from them, because anything that gets you where you're trying to go in a healthy,
different
safe way is fantastic.
Folks. Yeah,
exactly. But I do think that we really want an easy fix. So, I mean, really, like, to go back to the diet example, you could just ignore everything out there if you took the advice that everybody knows, which is, like, eat mostly fruits and vegetables, a little bit of protein, lots of water, low sugar. Like, these are really basic principles that nobody would argue with. And every single one of those diets has those as the core principles. You're never going to find, you know, a really great diet process that's like, vegetables are trash, don't eat that. So there's like core principles, and the same goes for decluttering. If you look at all of these programs, and some of them have become very trendy lately, like the KonMari style, and it's fantastic, but you also don't need to buy a $20 book to tell you how to do this. A lot of it just comes down to being conscious of what you consume. And my concern with a lot of the decluttering programs is that, I think there's one going on now for Lent where it's like 40 bags for 40 days. So you're supposed to get rid of a bag, like a garbage bag full of stuff every single day. And like, this sounds fantastic, and it's great to get people to declutter. But if you aren't also addressing stuff coming into your house, it's not enough to just take stuff out, because in 6 months, you're going to be in the exact same place that you are now. And it's the same with our obsession with organizational systems and products. So like the Container Store, you know, it's like, oh, I have too much stuff, but I just need to get organized. So I just need, you know, this bookcase with the matching wicker baskets and everything labeled. So and then we, you know, we do it and it feels so good.
And then my house then, looks like a week later.
Yeah. Yes. And it's because the issue is not organization. The issue is that we have too much stuff. Like, if you don't have more stuff than you have space to store it, you're not going to have a problem. So I think this, again, comes back to overconsumption, and that when you are trying to create a minimalist life, or even just a life with less stress and less stuff, that's a really, really fantastic goal. But don't just focus on how to pare down and get rid of stuff. Also focus on how and why you're bringing things into your home. Because if you don't address that, and, you know, why do you shop? Are you shopping when you're sad or anxious or nervous, or just something to do because it's your leisure activity? Are you buying things to treat yourself, to make yourself feel better, or just because it's habit that you haven't examined? If you don't take a look at that really honestly, the process is just going to keep repeating, and you're going to be trying a new organizational method next year and a new one after the year after that, and without ever addressing the real problem.
You know, and if you think about it, you are so on point, because there is a psychology that the country and advertising and media promote when you're looking the day or 2 days after Christmas about how much we spent, and, you know, it was down 8%. So it may have gone from like 15%, you know, to a much smaller number, even though it was an increase. It wasn't down. You know what I mean? It was just down from how much we consumed last year. I don't know if that's making sense, but the way we have the metrics in our mind is the country is healthy and whole and, you know, profitable if we're increasing our spending. That's what it comes down to. And that's wrong. That's one of the bases of it.
Exactly. And I was on this really fascinating webinar about maybe a month or two ago for this this guy, Dave Gardner, who produced a documentary called Growth Busters. And what he really talks about a lot is how our economy and our culture is based on continuous growth.
Yes, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
And how this is so flawed and so detrimental to the environment. But every system that we have relies on it. So, I mean, if for some reason everyone in the world just decided to take my message and stop consuming, everything would collapse. Like, we just wouldn't be able to sustain ourselves.
Right,
and this
is
why it makes people really nervous when you talk about it. Of course, that's not, I mean, that's really the least of our worries, is that everyone's going to do that. But it is an interesting and very antithetical thing to say to people, especially in America, don't consume, don't buy things, because that is not what our culture is based around at all. And it is really strange when you start examining that, and when you start really, really being conscious about it, and it's insane how second nature it is.
It is insane. And it's just, it's like we got an injection of it. And people think those, like you just said, if we're not growing, it's not healthy. And that's not true. I mean, it's really not true. There are things that we absolutely don't want to grow. And there are other alternatives to keep economies healthy and whole, like green energy and getting jobs in solar. I mean, there's ways that we can still show strong growth and employment and all that, but it doesn't all have to be related to consumption. So what about secondhand shopping? And let's just talk about that a little bit more, because I am a big believer. Another thing that has changed in my life, I have three daughters that I think I mentioned and two grandkids who embrace it. And, you know, like my daughter just went to, a friend of hers wants to get into the business of styling, you know, being a wardrobe stylist. And she went to help her out because she said, will you be like one of my clients? And Emily went to two secondhand stores and got everything and put it on Facebook and was proud of it. And it was awesome. You know, good finds. I think I told you my friend from Goodwill here in Tucson showed up for a Facebook Live interview in a Tahari dress and Kenneth Cole shoes that she got at the Goodwill boutique. And I, you know, she happens to be a size zero, so I think they have more sizes for that. But is secondhand shopping one good answer, and how do you see it trending?
Yeah, secondhand shopping, I think, is a great way to get people into a more conscious mode of consuming without being super, super foreign and uncomfortable. So I think I mentioned when we first started talking is that I used to be really grossed out by secondhand shopping. And I think a lot of people are like me, where you go in and you think, like, I don't want to wear something that somebody else has, like, sweated in, and, like, I don't know what they've been doing in this. This is really strange. And I was really unhappy when my mom, because we had six kids in my family, and so I was really unhappy when my mom would bring home secondhand clothes for me. It felt gross. And then I think a big part of that was because we grew up in quite a wealthy neighborhood, even though we weren't wealthy, and it was just so frowned upon by everyone around us. It was like, well, why would you buy used clothes? And then as I got older, and especially after I moved to BC, it became something that was kind of like an adventure. You would go and you would spend, you know, hours at Goodwill or Value Village trying to find that one fantastic thing. And so this was kind of fun. But for other people who don't want to, like we were talking about, who don't want to really brand themselves as eco-friendly, or just might not like the style or the selection offered by eco-friendly like clothing manufacturers, this is such a fantastic way to do it. And there's two ways to go about it. You can either go to consignment stores, which tend to be a bit more expensive because they're also paying a portion of that sticker price to the person who's selling the clothes, but they're also far more selective. So you go in there and you know that the clothes are going to be immaculate, in perfect condition, and oftentimes by really well-known brands. And so that if you're short on time, this is a fantastic way to do it. And it also kind of takes the ickiness out of it, because these places are like little boutiques often, where they're clean, they're well lit, they're really, really well staffed. You're not feeling like you're kind of like digging through bins of clothes. It's a very similar shopping experience to buying new.
I could not agree with you more. I just have to say that.
Yeah.
And it for me, I get overwhelmed sometimes in secondhand stores where there are so many things. And if I go into a couple, I have gotten treasures. And even though it's not as cheap or as inexpensive as maybe, you know, a Goodwill or a Savers, it's a brand that you're paying a third of what you would pay in the store. And then it's guilt-free because somebody else already, they have to be blamed for buying it in the first place.
Exactly. And then, you're just kind of like interrupting that cycle of buying. You avoid all the packaging, you avoid, you know, you kind of like get more for the environmental investment that's already been made. And another thing is that you learn really quickly when you're shopping for secondhand clothes and furniture too. It really destroys this sort of fast fashion habit that we have, because brands like, I don't know, maybe H&M or like Joe Fresh, the superstore brand, or, you know, sort of fast fashion brands like that, or even if we're talking about like furniture, some of the big box retailers, it looks so good on the showroom and it looks so good. The clothes look so good on the hanger of these brands. But after a few washes or a few years of using it, it really doesn't look that great. And it's so easy to tell that when you're secondhand shopping, because you look at the racks and you're not seeing, like when you see these brands, they're really worn, like,
or
you're not
apart,
seeing them
last. Seams coming out. They're just, you are so right. Buy
they're
some good clothes
made, so,
and keep them.
Exactly. So when I secondhand shop for my daughter, like when I was pregnant, I decided that I was going to try and source as much of her baby needs as I could secondhand. So everything from, you know, the breast pump to her crib to all of her onesies, even her cloth diapers, like everything was secondhand and in really, really good shape. But I started noticing when she was maybe one or two that a lot of her clothes were the same brands, and they tended to be more expensive, well-known clothing brands. And it wasn't because I was specifically looking for those brand names, because I'm not a big fan of logos or anything like that. It's just that when you look on the rack, those are the ones that actually
still
look good.
It's brands you can trust. Same thing.
Yeah.
You know, like my husband would say,
it's just a bit better quality.
Yeah, we'd come home and he'd say, why did you buy anything at Old Navy? And I don't care about talking about brands on the show, believe me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's crap. Like, it is pretty much crap in a lot of them. I mean, I can't even walk past Forever 21, let alone go in there. And it's because I know too much now. And I know that it is, you know, my line that all my kids love, like, oh, mom, please don't say it. Like, okay, buy that. It has the blood of children on it. You know, it's like anything for the shock
it's
value.
It's kind of disposable clothing. Like, it's clothing that isn't meant to last years. It's
five
meant to last
years.
The trend cycle.
It's so disgusting. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this gracefully, artfully, and professionally. I'm going to segue us to the next break. And when we come back, I have an hour's worth of questions, so we'll have to decide on what to focus. I'd like to talk a little bit about the book, and then if we have time, the whole DIY, do it yourself, and mm-hmm. you know, and I want to ask you what happened after you had Olive, which to me is like, did that make your passion ignite even more? Because once you have a child, it might change things. So people, yeah. we have a lot to cover. Put your listening hat on and get ready to listen to some more fun and interesting stuff about guilt-free green living and eco-friendly. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's world is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's world sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. And thank you so much for being a part of our world. Are we having fun or what? I mean, I just cannot make that up. It's like this is... Time flies when you're having fun, and living green and learning about eco-friendly, sustainable practices is just simply awesome. We are spending this hour with Madeline Somerville, writer, blogger, and author of All You Need Is Less, A Guilt-Free Guide to Eco-Friendly Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity. Madeline, thank you so much for being with us and for making this so much fun and exciting. And I think you need to write a song. Instead of all you need is love, all you need is less. I mean, it just when I start.
I think if you heard me singing, you would not be asking that.
Well, you write it and I'll sing it because I've got a good voice. But anyway, before we move on, I want to make sure that everybody knows how to find you. And, you know, Facebook is sweetmadeline.ca, Twitter, Madeline6, and it's M-A-D-E-L-E-I-N-E. I think I need to tell people that. And Instagram is sweet.madeline and Pinterest, Madeline6 as well. And your website, I think I mentioned, but I have it right here, sweetmadeline.ca. So it's important that everybody knows that because they're going to want to follow, retweet, read the blogs. And so it's up to you. I love to do this. Like, you want to talk a little bit more about the book and some of the things that you think are critical kernels for us to take away, and then cover some of the, you know, the things for good health that can be done economically and do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. I'll try and integrate both of them. I'll see if I can
Yeah, because there's probably, it's in there. It's in the book, but I want people to read the book. I want to read the book.
Perfect. Well, I'll go through, so one of the things I talk about is it's very easy to talk about reducing your consumption. It's very challenging to figure out how, especially when it's so ingrained in us. And it's not something that anyone's doing intentionally and maliciously. We're not going out trying to destroy the environment. It's just, it's second nature. It's habit. It doesn't occur to us that there is another way. So I have a series of questions that I ask. I don't do it so much anymore because it's sort of become internalized and I do it second nature now. But when I was starting out and I was really trying to be conscious about what I was buying, I would have four questions that I would ask myself. Let's see if I can remember them. So as I would get to the checkout with my grocery cart or my shopping cart, either online or in person, I would look at what I was buying and ask. The first question would be, do I need this? And this is a really tricky one because it's very, very easy to convince yourself that you need this throw pillow or you need this new blender or whatever. Need can be really sort of loose word. And only you can make this decision. No one else is going to come back and yell at you for what you've done. But just really question if you actually need this. And part of that question involves, how are you going to pay for it? Where are you going to store it? What are you going to do with it when it's reached the end of its life cycle or you're done with it? You know, how are you going to pay to maintain it? Like, all these things need to be considered, because oftentimes we think about purchases as treats when really they're responsibilities. Like, anything you're bringing into your home, you have to store, clean, maintain, and then dispose of. And all of this comes at a financial cost to you and a cost of your time and your space and, you know, occasionally your stress levels when you've got too much of it. So that's the first question is, do I need this? And then the second question is, can I buy it secondhand? Or can I make it? That's the second one. So if you are looking, and this is where a lot of the do-it-yourself recipes come in, if you are buying things like toothpaste or cleaners or shampoo and conditioner or even laundry detergent, oftentimes these are things that you could make at home with very, very few ingredients and very little effort. You don't have to be this wizard to do these things.
Right,
it's really
simple.
It's
not some secret formula for much of it.
No. And it seems so strange to think about because we're just used to going and buying things from a store. But it's actually so easy to make them yourself. Like, I honestly think the hardest part is often, like, figuring out where to get the ingredients. And then after that, it's so simple. And this even goes for things like, I don't know, if you're crafty and you could make a hat rather than buying one that's been made overseas by possible sweatshop labor.
Right,
like, these
right.
are all important things to consider. And so if you can't make it, because I cannot sew, so clearly I'm not sewing my own clothes or, you know, making my own furniture or anything like that. If you can't make it, I always look at the next question, which is, can you buy it secondhand? And this is where I go for basically everything from clothes to furniture to books to, I mean, plants, like everything. I try and shop secondhand, because it's a bit more environmentally friendly, and then it's also way less expensive. So you can have better quality items without spending the money that you would need to get them new, which is always fantastic.
Right.
And then the last question is this the best quality I can afford? So if you really need a white tank top, which it's impossible to find white tank tops secondhand, don't go and buy the $5 one that you're seeing, like, you know, in the cheap store. Like, try and buy one that's better made, that's going to last longer, that's not going to lose its shape. Like, try and buy things so that you're just buying good quality and that's going to last you rather than having to rebuy it in a few months or years. So everything from shoes to clothes to even food. Like, are you buying a $2 brick of junk cheese or are you spending $10 on, like, a really, really good bit of cheese? And this is the second part of that is the best quality that you can afford. So do it within your budget. Don't bankrupt yourself. But those are four questions that I find really, really help when looking at how to reduce your consumption. And then, yeah, so that's, I mean, mainly what my book focuses on is, I think I say at one point, even if you don't want to do any of the other stuff I've suggested, even if you have no interest in making your own cleaners or brushing your teeth with baking soda and you're just kind of rolling your eyes at all of this, that is completely fine. The one thing that you can do that's so easy and requires less effort than doing anything at all is just reducing what you purchase.
Buy
like
less.
Just cut your spending in half.
Oh my gosh. I love it. And the thing about the quality, like if you buy jeans, and several of the guests I've had on very recently, like this one, she is a one woman wonder. She has an Instagram account called Trash Is for Tossers.
And yes, Lauren Singer.
Yes, I had her on the show and talk about hysterical. And, you know, look at how hot, hip, happening she is. You know, and
exactly.
She puts something up on, you know, on Instagram with like her leg and something on it. And she gets 2,800 likes. You know what I mean? Like, she's got a cult following. And I got her Simply Co. laundry detergent for everybody on my team for Christmas. And she gives me hope. You know what I mean? She puts her waste in a jar.
Absolutely.
Which I'm not going to be her anytime either. But Lauren Singer is a rock star in our world.
But she's also doing what I think is so important. And this is something I try and touch on as well, is that there's different processes and different amounts of how much you want to do it yourself, and that's going to be really different for everybody. So she's aware, you know, she sort of does the same thing where she makes her own laundry detergent, she makes her own products, but she also recognizes that other people might not want to do that, and that's totally okay. So here's another option. You can buy the stuff that she makes. And that's the same with anything. It's not, and it goes back to that idea of it's not being all or nothing. If you don't want to make your own product, that is completely fine. Like, I'm not going to be sitting here side-eyeing you because you don't want to do that. Like, that's totally fine. There's another alternative. So often it can be, if you do buy like conventional beauty products, here's how you can recycle them, or here's brands that don't use animal testing, or here's a way to check what's in your makeup.
Right.
It doesn't all have to be, you know, so strict about it. I have a loose 80-20 rule that I use with everything in my life, which is if I can hit that mark 80% of the time, I have zero guilt about the other 20%. So, you know, I bring my jar as much as I can to get coffee, but on the one time I might not, I'm not going to feel guilty about that disposable cup. It's just what happens, you move on, right? So it's the same idea of just do what you can, basically, and then keep trying to improve, and that's all you can ask from people.
And it takes all the pressure off, because it's just not fun,
exactly.
And it's not sustainable if you keep on guilting yourself out of it. And I love what you say about, you know, take some small chunks and pick a few things and stick to it. And then when you were talking about clutter and waste, I mean, I have quite a few friends who have big homes and storage units. Some of them have one or two, and they're close friends, so I say, you've got to be kidding me, what's in there? And they say, don't look at me and with anything in your eyes. You have a big garage, and you only park one car in it. So it's like, you know what I mean? So there's that whole thing of, and what you keep saying to me is, just be conscious. Because I think for years, I went around as an unconscious consumer, because we're supposed to. And I did want to ask you a question. I know that you referenced like refinishing furniture. And of course, I wanted to know, are there really eco-friendly ways to do this? And again, it's not the moral lapse if you have to use some chemicals, because how often are you going to be refinishing furniture? You know, and then I just encourage people, do it outside. Make sure like you wear a mask if you're, you know, don't inhale the dust, because there's so much around that. But what's your advice or your takeaway for us on refinishing furniture? We used to do that when we had young kids, and it was fun. It was actually fun.
Totally.
And painted things, and, you know, there are pieces that we have today that I won't ever get rid of.
Yeah, it's a really fun thing to do, and it's a really accessible thing to do. And I haven't ever really gotten into refinishing furniture in terms of, like, standing it down and restoring it. I feel like that's still something that I haven't quite tackled. I feel like that's out of my skill level. But it's one of my favorite things to do when I'm trying to find new furniture, is to find really solid wood pieces, look past the finish, look past the stain, and realize that you can paint it. And this is a fantastic way to get fantastic solid pieces and then update them with some paint. And you're exactly right. Like, paint is not the most environmentally friendly choice. Like, the best thing to do would probably just be to sand it down and put some, you know, some oil on it and call it a day.
Yep.
But this is where you kind of like make the compromise versus like of lifestyle versus strict adherence to doing it. So what I tend to do is just get, a lot of the paint stores have little tester pots that you can get that are maybe $3 or $4. And so when I'm starting a project, I usually just get one of those, because that's typically enough to cover, you know, a dresser or a desk, and then you don't have a ton of paint left over, which is fantastic. And then you can also get low VOC paints that don't have emissions that the others do. And I tend to make my own chalk paint, which is really, really simple. There's recipes all over the internet. You basically just combine plaster of Paris with regular paint, and it makes it really, really, it adheres really well to bare wood. And so what this does is, it takes away the need to prime and spend a lot of time sanding. So it just kind of removes one step, and it gives a really nice finish. And I mean, it's just a fantastic look, especially if you're doing like a distressed finish. So that way you can skip priming. And again, like, you can research it and make sure that it's right for the project that you're doing. But it's really simple to make, and they sell chalk paints, but they're really, really expensive. And so this is sort of a little hack that you can do. But yeah, this is the key when you're looking for secondhand furniture, to try and look past the color or the paint or, you know, the garishness of whatever somebody else has done to it, and realize that you could make it anything you want. And especially with things like Pinterest, I mean, this is absolutely incredible. Like, it's a really fun thing to do.
And we have to just say, a lot of what I read from what you are about is, it's fun. It's just fun.
Yeah.
And it's better than going to the mall and shopping. Because that, to me, that is not fun. I have to take a deep breath now. And believe me, from 20 years ago, I could spend 3 hours with my two younger girls in Target. And I'm so not kidding. My husband called one time and said, are you guys still alive? Like, you said you were just going to Target. But we found fine things to do. And not even just major consuming, but just shopping. So I want to ask you also about your thoughts on what can we actually gain, like kind of the deeper cut on how can it impact your life and why is living with less something that we should all at least be pressing pause and considering for our own well-being? What are your thoughts on that? Deep thoughts from Madeline.
Yeah. I think the thing that surprised me most is that it's not, you're not giving anything up. And that's often what it feels like when you get into this. And when I first started, it was sort of like, I'm going to take one for the team. You know, I'm going to be the martyr and I'm going to be the saint who gives up shopping and who gives up this. And, you know, I'm just going to be over here making my own stuff. And it was sort of this idea that like, okay, I was going to make a sacrifice because I thought it was worth it.
I am the martyr.
And what I found, yes, exactly. And not necessarily even in a dramatic way, but just it was this idea of like, okay, I know this won't be as fun or as entertaining or as beautiful, but I'm going to do it anyways because I really believe in what it's about. But in the years since, I realized that it's really been the opposite. And I say this, I know it sounds cheesy, and I would probably eye roll myself if I was hearing me talk about it. But it's like living like this with consuming less, and I'm not a minimalist by any means. I don't live in like a white house with no pictures on the wall. I have a very, you know, I like my home to be beautiful. But living like this and really consciously consuming has made it possible for me to live a life that I wouldn't be able to otherwise. I'm a single mom, so I stay home with my daughter. She's 4, and I can support myself with my writing. And the only reason that that's possible is because of the way I live, because of the fact that I have a very small house, because of the fact that I'm not buying a lot of things, because of the fact that when I do go shopping for our clothes, I spend $20 on a spring wardrobe for her at a secondhand store rather than $200 at a brand new store. Because we don't eat meat, so our grocery budget is less. Like, every decision that I've made has paid off in some other way. So I wouldn't be able to stay home with my daughter and be doing work that I love if I lived a bigger life in terms of material possessions. And it's such an interesting thing to realize, because it doesn't feel like that initially. You feel like you're giving things up. You're giving up meat. You're giving up shopping. You're giving up all these beautiful things. And it can feel really intimidating and like, what's the payoff? But that is the payoff. You're not losing out. You're gaining this sense of freedom. And it enables you to live this life that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. And it's a very, I don't know, it's a very rewarding thing to have that sort of result. Like, there's a quote that I really love, and it's called the price of anything is the amount of life you have to pay for it.
Wow.
And this is basically what we do. We work so hard, and people are working so incredibly hard to have these big houses, and then you have to furnish the house, and then you have to decorate the house, and then you need to maintain the house. And it's just, it's really, really exhausting, and we're hurting our health and our sanity and our relationships for these goals that are headed kind of in the wrong direction. So if you can rejig that and turn it on its end and figure out what is actually important and then build your life from there, it's just kind of an incredible result that you get to.
And what a way to end it. For me, it's shifting what I used to think abundance meant, a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now for me, abundance is so different. It's time with family. It's sharing a meal. It's going and spending time myself in nature and being able to do that in freedom. So it's just abundance. The whole thought of that to me has changed. And no part of that, you know, that conversation now involves having a lot of stuff. And I hope for the people that are listening, it's so important if you are starting a family or thinking about it. You know, we followed the track of bigger house, 2 jobs, bigger mortgage, new car, and, you know, no regrets in the rearview mirror. We made it work, but there are probably different choices that we're making now and in the future. So thank you. I feel like we're friends from the radio show. It's like we're definitely, you know, kindred spirits for sure. And I came to the journey the same way you did. I was a lot older though. And when you were saying things, it's like, that was me. So everybody, I encourage you to, even go to a used bookstore, which I wasn't going to say, but knowing you, mm-hmm. you would support that.
Totally. Or a library.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
To get All You Need Is Less, a guilt-free guide to eco-friendly green living and stress-free simplicity, and then share it. Our Down to Earth show is Janine Sullivan, Why Share Your Ride, and our 28th show, March 28th, we're having women talking about bio-nursing from somewhere in South America. It's going to be a great show. Madeline, thank you for crossing my path and for such a great show.
Thanks so much for having me, Gina.
Make it a great green day, everybody.